My words are weapons.
I use them to crush my opponents.
My words are weapons.
I never show no emotion.
My words are weapons.
I use them
to kill whoever step into me. My words are like weaponry.
Please join our Patreon. In this episode, one of my old friends from way back in my stand-up comedy days, Brian Olsen, he's a comedian, writer. He's been on Chappelle's Show. He's been on a lot of different things. He wrote for the Comedy Central Roast. He wrote for the Jim Jeffries Show. He's a really funny guy. He's a great guy. When I started talking to him, I realized I hadn't seen him in years. And we talk about a lot of cool things. I actually, when we started talking, I'd forgotten that he had been such a big part of the Chappelle Show from its genesis. And he actually was early on one of the people that was going to be in one of their most popular sketches, the Mad Real World, and he talks about that. And we also unpack the Chris Rock special, A Selective Outrage, that apparently has gotten backlash for some odd reason. And I mentioned join our Patreon. This interview and show with Brian Olsen goes long, and so I split it into two parts. The first part is free, and if you want to listen to the second half of our conversation, you can join our Patreon and just give whatever you want and get the second part there. And there's also a lot of other bonus content, so check it out, enjoy it. This is my conversation with Brian Olsen.
Thank you.
Sure, no problem. So it has been at least about 2017, I guess. Wow, it's just fucking weird because I didn't know you had moved.
Yeah. Well, when did you go to law school?
I went in 2015 is when I started. So like...
I feel like I saw you and then I stopped seeing you around then. Were you doing stand-up at law school?
Like while I was in law school, the first semester, I think I did it a little bit and then I sort of stopped because it got so crazy during that time. And then I think I started a little more like my second year, but it's weird, I did keep doing it, just not as much. Which is kind of scary. I just couldn't. I don't know why I kept doing it. It almost became like a recreational thing. So
yeah, like a bowling league or something. Like, you know,
kind of. Which it should be more treated as.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, I think there's something really good about that, which is like you've spent a long time learning how to do something, and you know how to do it, and you can do it really well. Like, why stop? You know what I mean? Like, it's like. Because it's like you already, it's like going to medical school and just not being a doctor then. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what would be the point really then to just, if you already know how to do the thing, like that's the hardest part. It's like, you know.
Yeah. So I would do it. It became almost like a social thing at that point. Just like that was my way to like go out and hang out with people. So, and I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast. I feel like when I went to, law school and I was kind of like backed away from stand-up and wasn't doing it as much. That's when it kind of felt like more like a cult to me. Do you know what I mean? Like maybe not as bad as other cults, but there's cult-like aspects where I felt like when I went to law school and I would still come around, people treated me differently. Like comedians were kind of weird to me. Like they, like almost like
in
I had
way? Like you're not like a real comic or something. Like
yeah, like I had like left the shit. Gang or something. Like the Bloods. It was kind of like
yeah.
but I was like, well, that's great, but I also need to make money. So I am in my 40s. So this is great and all, but if you're going to give me a job, great. But if not, then. So I think that almost kept me doing it a little longer. Cause then I was like, it was like, I had something to prove kind of, well, I was like, kind of like, I wanted to be like, okay, well, just cause I do this doesn't mean I can't like that. I'm still not good at this other thing. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, of course. No. And I mean, I guess that is a weird thing, but also like anybody that's going to like treat you like you're not in the club, it's like, I mean, stand-up is so crazily unfair. You know what I mean? Like, it's like there's, it's just such a crazy, like, like, there are so many people that make it that are great, obviously, but I've seen, and you've seen, like, there's tons of people that are so fucking funny that I don't know why. You know what I mean? Like,
well, I think it, you know, it's funny. The more I got away from it, the more, and also, like, you know, that was the interesting thing about when I knew you, you know, when we met doing stand up, and when kind of me writing my book was, you know, you obviously when time progresses, you know, things are changing. But when I, you know, one day I just kind of looked back and thought about not that long before, like around 2010-ish. Right. And I was like, wow, the landscape from then to now is just so different. It's just such a different playing field. Like, just everything has changed. Like, because when we were doing stand-up, like, it was kind of, you know, I kind of wanted to cover the era of, like, the aughts when, like, I moved to New York. Sure. And like, the alt scene kind of became a thing. And it was before, it doesn't feel like that long. It was before podcasts. It was before social media. It was, like, YouTube was brand new. So it was kind of the beginning of all that stuff. So once all mm-hmm. that shit came, we were, like, right at the, you know, right at the end of that era.
I know. We were, like, right at the point when none of that was practical for us. Like, all of a sudden, these, like, really good tools came. Like, it's like, oh, you can promote yourself on YouTube. You can do this, that, and the other. It's like, I feel like I was already too old to benefit from any of that. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, because to be on, and also, I mean, part of it is the taste of YouTube. It's like to be, you know, on YouTube, you like the really big people on YouTube were just like high RPM, go, 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 like me. Like, it didn't matter. Like,
right,
things like material and everything didn't really matter. It's like, hey guys, click and subscribe. Here's what's in my purse.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, that now,
20 people. Yeah.
That's like the template now. And I can't, I mean, that's not, there's these people, they're just like, hey man. And I'm just like, I don't know what the hell that is. I can't be that guy. So, but also I remember like when YouTube burst on the scene and some people were using it, utilizing it really early on, you know, smartly, like, you know, the, like Aziz and the Human Giant guys were like the first guys to like utilize it to propel them into an actual career. And that was kind of like, that was like this phenomenon that people were like, oh my God. Like, there was a thing where it was like, Dane Cook or these guys, they're using social media as like a way to kind of like get people to know about them. And it was, the feeling was almost like, like two people did it, you know, like a few people did it. And you were like, well, that's it. They did it. No one else can do it now. Like, it was kind of like they got there first. So, and then later it was like, oh wait, everyone can do this. Like that, now it's just, you can just do that and be that. But I think I was thinking, I don't know what, do you still do stand up?
No, I haven't done stand up since, well, I kind of stopped doing stand up in 2008, actually. It was when me and Neil sold that script. And then, and it was like, I gotta like write more, because like that was a chance. Like, I was like, well, this is a real way for me to at least try to make money. You know what I mean?
Can you, like, can like, I, so I just want to interrupt. So Neil, you and Neil Brennan wrote a
Neil
script.
Neil Brennan, yeah.
And you guys sold it, right? To like, didn't you sell it to like Ivan Reitman or something?
We sold it to Ivan Reitman, yeah. And so it was like, personally, I have a hard time doing more than one thing at a time. Like, if I'm going to just do stand up, I'm just going to do stand up. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm not talking about like a writing job where you have it just like you show up and you're supposed to write jokes, but something that's really like as intensive as like a screenplay. Like, you know, like it's like a screenplay takes a lot of time. And a lot of it is like not even the time writing. It's just walking around trying to figure out how to stick it all together and all that stuff.
Which is so weird, because it deceptively looks like not a lot of work, a screenplay, because you're like, this must be the easiest thing to write because there's like not a lot on the page. But that's actually a harder thing to write. People don't realize that. It's like I forgot, some famous writer said something like, I would have made this letter shorter, but I didn't have time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I remember reading that. Whoever said that, like, it's, I think it's that. And also stand-up is
hard, it's grueling.
Like, it's grueling. Like, stand-up's hard to argue with, though, because when you see a really good stand-up, you know, that sort of bang, 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 like, it's like joke, joke, joke. And it's so nutrient-rich as far as, like, those premises are really good. And, like, man, they're just killing you, you know? They're really, like, hitting you. It's like, I'm always a little bummed, like, a screenplay can never really quite achieve that, like, the comedy, you know what I mean? Because you have to lay down things like, all right, now they have to save the senior citizen center by having a bikini car wash or so, you know, whatever. Like, just some big, dumb, clunky thing that, you know, for all intents and purposes, isn't going to really happen. But, like, in stand-up, you just don't need, it doesn't need to be plotted stand-up, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You just go, it's like cartoons, like, you can cut to anything. You can go to your next joke, doesn't matter. You can, doesn't, you know, I mean, unless you're telling a story, and even telling a story, you're just going joke by joke, you know, you're just going, here's the first part of the story, so the joke is this, and then, so it's all very, like, clean.
Did
you know?
Did you like doing stand-up? That's a weird...
You know what it is? I didn't... At first, I did. I thought it was, like... The first time I did it, I was actually in high school, I think. I was in my senior year of high school, and I lived in Akron. I grew up in Akron, and one day, I was in my high school. It's just something I always wanted to do. Like, I just, like, was a, like you, like all of us, I'm sure, just very obsessed with stand-ups and everything. And, you know, I had a few albums I used to listen to just, like, over and over.
What would you listen to?
So it was like, I mean, it won't surprise, but it would be like,
Gallagher.
I'm still listening to Gallagher.
Liam Gallagher, right?
Liam Gallagher. I listened to a lot of Lake Wobegon days. I liked that. I liked a lot of NPR stuff. I liked, no, it would be like, I'm trying to think of the guy's name that had the beard that was like the dumb, silly song singer. Like, it was like there were infomercials about him in the, like, he was always selling his goofy.
Oh, okay.
You were
into stand-up like young. You were into stand-up like
I thought it was like the awesomest like
that's another thing though. I feel like when we were younger, I mean, we're around the same age, like,
yeah,
like there were like two stand-up specials when I was growing up. It was like Eddie Murphy and then like Richard Pryor, and then that was it. I mean, I know that there was more. But there were albums, but it definitely was not out in, you know, it's not like now where like they're just like ubiquitous. And now it was based, it was a huge deal when someone had a stand-up
special. It was a huge deal. And so it's like, yeah, my favorite comics, like when I was a little kid, like obviously I would go to the library and they had all the Bill Cosby albums. So I'd get his stuff. And like that was like the first time I remember thinking like, this is so great. Like you can just tell stories about like your life and crazy people you've met and everything. Like, and it was so funny, you know, like not even just the Fat Albert stories, but like the thing about, you know, God telling Noah to build the ark and all that stuff. And he would do all the sound effects, you know, like he's like sawing.
I never really listened to him growing, like, ever.
Is that right? Okay.
I never really, you know, that's the thing is like, I was into stand up a little bit young, but I was into comedy, but I was more into like movies, like comedy movies and like,
sure.
More pop culture-y, like TV thing, like, you know, maybe an icon that the people that I looked up to in comedy were more like, oh, I like that type of character, you know, like I could be like that kind of a guy. I wasn't stand up, like was always kind of like, yeah, that looks okay. Like it definitely wasn't. I was funny when I was a kid. And like, I thought I was like, yeah, I want to be a comedian, but I didn't even know what that meant really. You know what I mean? I remember thinking young, like really young being like, what do you even do? You know what I mean? I mean, cause that, I don't know if you thought about doing comedy younger, but like we grew up in that time where it was like, you'd be like, well, where do I go? Like, where do I even start doing this? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, I'm, yes, exactly. Well, I'm talking about when I was probably 10 or 11. You know what I mean? Like, that would have been the time. So it's like, it didn't exactly occur to me then. It just dawned on me that, like, a person did this for a living. You know what I mean? Like, that they could just go talk about their childhood. And they could do all these like silly voices and they could do all this stuff. And then my dad actually was a huge Richard Pryor fan. So, you know, because that was like a thing, like party albums, you know, like Red Fox and Richard Pryor. That was like a thing. Adult, I thought that was such a cool thing that, like, I mean, I remember being a very little kid, my parents occasionally having other adults over and putting on like a Pryor album or something. And I remember hearing it. And certainly I remember.
Really? They would do that as like a social gathering?
I mean, it wouldn't be the whole night, but you know what I mean? They would be having drinks. They'd be having dinner. They'd put on music. And then, you know, it was a legitimately viable way. I mean, cable TV isn't even really a big thing at that point. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, so I do remember, it's not like everybody sit down and be quiet. We're going to listen to, but it was more like, it was just kind of
like
in the
background. Yeah.
Yeah. Like kind of, and you know, the way people would watch a TV show together. God, this sounds so old.
Well, like, I mean, I do remember like, yeah, I remember being a kid and my, yeah, parents, I mean, playing records. That was just like a thing. I mean, music, you know, it was like, but that was just a thing that you did. And then it got to a point. It is funny. I feel like when I was growing up, like comedy records were just not a thing in my house. It's just no one.
Really?
My parents weren't really into like comedy. Like, I feel like I must have known that there were comedy records, but it just was so foreign to me. Like the only time I really saw stand-up was on TV or like Eddie Murphy or like, you know, Richard. Like, I remember being into Richard Pryor. Like, he did the, you know, he was doing the movie stand. Like, he was releasing movies that were stand-up, which was crazy to me.
It's amazing. I mean, it's like, and then I remember around 11 is when Delirious came out. And everybody of our generation, it's like, you saw that and it was like, game over. Like, you couldn't even believe it, you know? Like,
well, it was, what's interesting about that is like, I saw an interview with him and he said that, you know, he was on SNL and he was doing like movies and he became such a big star. And he was saying that like, no one really even knew he did stand up. He was kind of like, oh yeah, I'm going to do a stand up special. And people were kind of like, you do stand up? Like, it was almost like in the, he didn't become famous as a stand up. It was like, he was really famous. And then all of a sudden he was like, oh, by the way, I do this too. And everyone was like, oh my God, like, he's like amazing at this thing too. Like, how did he, and he was like 20 or something. It's like crazy.
I think it was, he was 20. I don't even think he was like legitimately, like, I don't even think he's legally like old enough to drink. And unless he might be 22, but I think he's very young. Either way, he put out that album beforehand, the one with the rose in his hair.
Yeah.
Buckwheat on it and Boogie in Your Butt and all that. Like,
it's right.
Like,
yeah.
That was a couple years before Delirious. So 19 when he knocks that thing out and he's fucking great. You know what I mean?
It's,
like,
it's really weird about him is like, he's such an anomaly because when you look back on it now, it's like, I've never seen that ever again, or it just seems like somebody's never had, where like this guy comes out, becomes this huge cultural icon overnight. He's doing stand up. He releases these huge specials, like basically two huge specials, and then he just stops doing it and then just never does it again. It's like such an odd, like, you know, people are always like, oh, you know, stand-ups, they need to do stand-up. It's like, well, I mean, this guy who, like, was the greatest stand-up in the world, just, like, the fact that he did stand-up for, like, 6 or 7 years and then just was like, eh, I think I'm done. Two classic specials, I'm done.
I think that's, yeah, but I think he had the same thing that Steve Martin did. Like, when it's like, they became so big, so fat. Like, it was like, the upward trajectory was like at like a 90 degree angle. Like, it was like they just kept going higher and higher and higher. And like, you know, the thing about Steve Martin where he was just like, I can't do stand up anymore because all they do is shout my catchphrases at me. Like, I can't.
Yeah.
Now it's like we're performing for each other. Like, there's no way for me to lock into an audience. And I think with Eddie Murphy, I remember after Raw, like the ton of backlash and the ton of, you know, it sort of predated like Dice and all that, which is like, oh, he just attacks like gay people. He just does the F word a lot. He does.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, X, Y, and Z. And I think because in Raw, he talks a lot about that and he's already pretty angry about it. Like at the beginning, like he addresses like the critics and stuff. But I think by the end, like, I remember being a kid and wanting to see Raw, and like there being articles in like our paper, be like the Akron Beacon Journal would just say, like, you know, it'd be these opinion pieces, like, all he does is swear, this guy, or something. You know what I mean? It was like, it just, I think when you become that big that fast, you're destined to be taken down. You know, it's like, it's just, it's like, even as great as that guy is, it's like your head's next on the chopping block.
And he did get, and they definitely did, the backlash to him. It mainly came in the form of everyone was like, his movies are shit. And his movies did kind of become shitty in like the 90s. It was kind of, I also think he was so talented. It was kind of like you were saying with Steve Martin, like some people, they're just so talented. It was almost like stand up, like, he was too big to be contained by stand up. You know what I mean? Like, he just had so much talent. Right. It like needed to just be on like a bigger platform. Like, he just, I can't do this anymore. This is like, I can't just stand there and do that. There's so many things that I can do. He's just someone that, like, I mean, I know this isn't a hot take, but like, I mean, Eddie Murphy obviously is just fucking like, so fucking hilarious. I feel like he almost doesn't get enough credit for seeing him in interviews. Because even now when he's like a lot more toned down and chill, and people are like, oh, he doesn't really try to be funny. He's very like complacent almost and relaxed. But when you hear him talk in an interview, he's just very naturally funny. Like, he just says things. Yeah. You're just like, oh, he's not trying to be funny. He just has. And also, his thing was like, he transcended age and race and any, you know what I mean? I was an 11-year-old white kid, and I thought he was hilarious, you know?
It was almost my entree into, like, hip-hop. I mean, in a way that was prior, probably a little bit before. Because it's like, prior did movies, you know, like The Toy, which is obviously, like, people said it was, like, super racist and all this stuff. But, like, when I was a kid, I didn't it that way. I just thought, like, that would be amazing. You just get to hang out in a toy house with Richard Pryor all day. Like, that sounds awesome, right? You know,
which,
like,
in reality, that probably would not be the most fun,
probably
thing
not
for
be
a
the
kid.
Best idea. It would like probably have to be a very
Richard, why are you lighting that thing?
Like, it'd be a really upsetting. But, you know, just hearing them, like, just their very, like, voices are fun to listen to. Like, your ear is drawn to it, you know. Richard Pryor, just him cussing was funny to me. But like, him doing like Mudbone, which I didn't even really understand at the time, it's just, you could just tell that it was funny. I think you could show it to an animal and they would just know that was funny, you know what I mean?
Yeah, he definitely, I saw Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip. It came out in 82. I must have been like 9, and you know, I for some reason, I got it in my head, like, oh, God, yeah, I really need to see this, you know, Richard Pryor, you know. And but I was like 9. And I mean, I don't think I understood most of it. You know what I mean? But I mean, I did think it was funny, or I pretended like even if you don't really know it's funny, you're kind of like, yeah, apparently this is what something really funny is. Like, I didn't watch and go, like, I have no idea what this is, which a lot of comedy later on, I'd be like, I don't think this is funny. And for years, I would watch Richard Pryor when I did comedy, and I was always like, well, what is he doing that's so great? You know what I mean? I don't know if you ever, like, when I started doing stand-up, I would watch comedians, and I would just try and parse out, like, well, what are they doing? Like, why is this funny? Is like, what's making them funny? And I feel like I just figured it out with him like a year ago, where it's not like his material. And I mean, this is for most comedians. It's just like him, just something about him that's so, you know, there's a presence that like not many people have, you know what I mean? That, and apparently his thing was that he wouldn't really even write a lot of stuff out. He would just kind of like have a premise and then just kind of go off on it.
He would like write on stage and all that stuff. I remember when I would do Chappelle's show sometimes, Paul Mooney was there sometimes, because I was in a sketch with Paul Mooney. And
was that the Negrodamus sketch?
Negrodamus, yeah. But he used to do other stuff on the show, but that was the one I was in with him. And I remember one day, you know, they had called lunch, and usually he would go eat with Dave. Like, I never saw him. It was just me and the other actors, you know, but he was in the lunch line, and I immediately was like, I got right behind him in the lunch line, and I thought, I'm going to just start talking about random stuff. You know what I mean? Like, what's there to eat or whatever. And then when he goes to a table, we'll already be in a conversation, and I can go sit down next to him. And then I can, because I liked Paul Mooney a lot too. I never saw Paul Mooney till way, way, way later. You know what I mean?
Was like, he, did was you actually college. Have like, did you ever get to, did you get to talk to him? Like while
yeah,
you were
I did,
shooting?
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah, what was that like? Was he
it
cool?
It was amazing. Well, he was and he wasn't. Like, it wasn't like, he was cool, but it was definitely like, I feel like when you talk to Paul Mooney, it was a little bit like what you see with like Charlie Murphy. Like, it's like, they definitely have this armor on that feels intimidating. You know what I mean? And you don't feel like, so I was just talking to him and he had just seen me in the sketch that I was in. So I was just blabbing, but I wanted to ask him first about his stand-up. Because I saw him when I saw him in like 1998 at the Comedy Store, and he just had a glass of wine. And I remember he just sat on stage on a stool and like would talk slowly or talk low. And it made yeah. everybody in the audience like lean forward. And I had never really seen anybody do that deliberately or effectively, you know what I mean? Where
yeah.
it's like, some people, it seems like, yeah, maybe they would just tell a joke like that or whatever, but it seemed like he really just had everybody in the palm of his hand.
I do remember not to interrupt, but I do remember seeing him at the Comedy Store doing that one night late at night early on. And I remember, I didn't know who, I was doing comedy about a year and a half. I had no idea who he was. Everyone was like, you got to watch this guy. He's a legend. And I remember I went in there and he was just sitting there on a stool and I was like, what is this guy doing? He just seems like he's just not doing anything. But
he was really, I thought he was, the night I saw him, I thought he was hilarious. It was a very big, it was a packed crowd. It wasn't the belly room. I think it must have been the main room or whatever. But I just remember sitting there just being like, because it's like, I know the name because he's on all the Pryor albums written by Richard Pryor and Paul Mooney, or he's thanked. Like in the notes or whatever, and just
didn't he write, like didn't good. He did he did he help write like Blazing Saddles also kind of
he might have been yeah he might have I mean I'm not sure if that's true, but I think it might have been
I think like, he I might think, have yeah
yeah but like so I
wait can I I'm sorry can I just pause yeah, for a second I'm sorry right. I
so I
okay. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Paul Mooney. We were talking about.
I've seen his stand up, and I liked him, and I knew he wrote for like In Living Color, and you know had written for a lot of cool stuff. And so I sat down at the table with him, like, and I think at first he seemed like a little surprised, but I was like, I have to know everything about.
Was it just him, like, or was some were other people with him?
Nobody was with him. It was just him. I mean, it was like all the actors. You know, it was like lunchtime or whatever.
Right.
Like they're all sitting at the different tables. But I mean, I just tried to make it seem as natural as possible, because what I really want to do is just talk to Paul Mooney about any and all of it, you know? And so I asked him like about the stand up of his that I saw at like the Comedy Store, and I was asking him about that and him starting stand up and writing for In Living Color and everything. And then at one point, this is the thing I really remember the most. I jumped the gun totally. I was like, what was it like when you and Richard Pryor wrote together? And I could just see this look on his face that was like, I had just, like, he seemed like he did not want to
go into that. I mean, that's like the most open-ended.
It's like the most open-ended thing, but also it's like, he's talked about this in a billion places. I'm sure it's one part of his life of many parts of his life, but it was more like, maybe it was just the mood he was in that day. I can't really say, but it was funny. He goes, are you a stand-up comic? And I go, yeah, yeah. And he goes, do you have friends that are stand-up comics? And I go, yep. He goes, do you guys write together sometimes? Yep. He goes, It was like that. Like, I don't know what I was expecting. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I guess I always on some level feel like someone's going to give you some bit of wisdom and then that's just going to open up all the doors. You know, like I always feel like,
well, especially when you're like, I think when you're early and as a comedian, you kind of are more, you're looking at it more like that. Like,
yeah.
But it would make sense that he's probably talked about that a lot. And, it's probably, you know, been doing comedy so long, was probably just kind of over that whole thing of it. It was just like, yeah, it was fine. He was fine.
Yeah. Like it's like, I'm sure it's now, it's like, we're the age that he was at when he did that. It's like, well, how do you feel about stand-up? How do I feel about stand-up? You know what I mean? It's just like, it's not like, yeah, you're so pie-eyed at the time, you know, like, oh my God, this is like a, like, but it's just, you know, and he was cool. Like, he eventually talked to me about it a little bit, but it was more, he, you know, he answered my questions for the most part. It just wasn't like, he wasn't like a chatty guy.
Wait, can I mean, so, you know, Chappelle's show, I mean, you know, I was like just kind of starting stand up around that time when that show became big.
Right.
And, I actually talk about a little bit in my book how like Neil Brennan was just kind of around, right, like when I was doing stand up, and he was like this new comedian, but it was all, it got, you know, around fast. People were like, oh, he wrote Half Baked with Dave Chappelle, and that was like a huge deal. So like, and then all of a sudden that show happened, and you know, it was kind of like this thing that you kind of heard about, like, oh yeah, that's cool. And then all of a sudden it was like huge. So you were on that a lot, and you might not have been aware of it at the time, but like that, it, you know, you weren't aware there was going to become this huge, like, cultural iconic thing. You know what I mean? And that became even, the lore became even bigger because of what happened around it when he left. So what was that? What was that? Were you there? Like, did you work on the last season? You know, what the half season that they did, where they, you know, when he left?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, well, you know, when it first started, you know, none of it had aired. I they had me audition for the white guy in the black, all black Real World, which Finnegan got.
And, yeah, I remember that. That was one of their first really big sticks that hit. Yeah.
But when they sent me the sides, like, I just looked at them and, I was just like, just see, I mean, the math was on the page. It was like, this is gonna be so funny. Like, you don't even have to do much, like, as an actor. Like, if you just say these lines sincerely, like, and they say their lines, this is just, this will kill, you know. This is like, so I was bummed when I didn't get it, but then they just started calling me in for little things, you know what I mean?
What was it like working on that? I mean, it must have been cool, right? But were you even aware of like what it was gonna, I mean, you must have been aware later when you were doing it, because then it became huge. And they kept going.
Well, yeah, it was like, at first it was like, this is certainly a show I would watch. You know what I mean? Like, it's like just getting the things before it had aired or anything like that. It was like, oh my God, like just hearing about what they would do, or getting the sides for that. Or then when they would send me the sides for like some of the other stuff when I would come in to do something. Like, it was definitely like, these are all hilarious ideas and this is really funny. And but I actually think it was after, the white guy in the all black Real World. I remember, I think it was already pretty big by that time, but it just felt like every week it was like exponentially jumping, like more and more people seemed to be talking about it. Like, I remember one day, because I, at the time, I think I was living in the Upper West Side with like Bob Powers, you know, Bob.
Yeah, of course.
He was my roommate. And I had taken Julius Sharp's old room. He had just moved to L.A. and there was another guy living there. And so I remember getting on the train one day to go to work, not Chappelle Show, just go. And there was like maybe 15 kids, like just the middle school kids, and they were all talking about Chappelle Show and saying the catchphrases and everything. It was just like, it was really like, whoa, like, it's, you know, this is really like out there. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
yeah.
Usually like my, you know, yeah, your day job is just so disconnected from stand up, like whatever it is, like whatever you're doing just to make money while you're trying to get good at stand up. It's like, has nothing to do with it. It's part of your life. You try to forget about as you're doing it, you know, but like to see that and to see like, it was just like, oh my God, like, holy shit. Like this is something like,
and it was fast with that show. It was like, and again, it was before ever, it was like the internet was around and stuff, but it wasn't what it was at all. And it was just kind of like, it felt like that first season came out and then it was just huge. And then it became this thing where this was still when DVD box sets were a thing, and it became like the highest selling DVD box set of all
like
time.
TV show of all time or something. Like it was like, it's a, it, I mean, it's, it was like some astronomical, thing.
And it was weird too, because it was like, you know, Neil was just this guy who was around, and then it was like, I think it's even in the book I talk about where he was like, oh yeah, like I shot this pilot with Chappelle, and
we're watching it at
And he's like, here's the pilot, like, you know, check it out. And we were just like, all right. And you know, it was like, you know, we were like, wow, that's good. You know, like, it was just funny. Yeah, like, we were like, oh, this is good, man. Like, cool. And then it was like the biggest show in the world. And in the book, I referenced that, like, I came up with the name of the show, which isn't true, but, you know.
Yeah. Was that Roger's place in the Lower East Side?
It was, I think it was actually when he lived on, like, 15th or 16th or something. He lived there before he moved to the one down on like Avenue B,
right near the park, right?
Yeah,
the one end near that bar. What was the bar?
It's I think it was called 7B's was what people called it.
7B, that's what it was. Yeah.
So he was right near there. But yeah, so that, and I actually remember you always kind of popping up on that show. And I actually remember I was living with Rusty Ward at the time. And you guys were friends. And I remember Rusty was like, there was some kind of rumor going around that Chappelle wasn't happy or something. Like that was a thing that was kind of, I kind of heard. There was something going around that it was like, I don't know what it was. And then all of a sudden he was like, I came home one day and he was like, Chappelle's show's over. And I was like, what do you mean? And he's like, I'm pretty sure he said he talked to you. And he was like, I was talking to Ryan Olsen and he told me it's over. Like he left. And I was like, oh, that's weird. And then that became, and then that what was really weird, but you probably experienced it too, was like that became him leaving was this huge, not just story. It was like a huge cultural event where like Chappelle was on like Oprah and Inside the Actor's Studio talking about like Neil Brennan. You know what I mean? It was just like, it was weird.
Yeah.
They would show clips on Inside the Actor's Studio and it'd be like from the show and it'd be people I knew like in the show on Inside the Actor's Studio. And I was just like, wow, this is like beyond just some big comedy success story. You know what I mean? It was like, this is like,
yeah, it was a cultural touchstone. It was like a real, like, it's like, I mean, it was like something that I think that was the last, I think Neil and Dave, like that's probably the last by appointment comedy show that there has been on TV. You know what I mean? Like, I think that
yeah, you couldn't watch it. You couldn't watch it later yet.
You couldn't watch it later because it felt like a party. It just really felt like a party was happening. Like, whatever party you think you're going to go to on Wednesday, it's not going to be cooler than this. I mean, even Tiffany, my wife now, but my girlfriend then, was just like, Fern of friends would get together and watch. Like, everybody I knew, there would just be like, oh, let's get, you know, burgers or pizza and watch Chappelle. And it just, I mean, there were so many different types of, like I say, the kids on the subway, my girlfriend, people in comedy, people not in comedy. It's like, it just felt like everybody knew Wednesday night. It's like, just, this is the place to be. I don't think there's been a comedy show since then that has been like,
not like that.
Not like that. I don't think, I think it's,
and it was, actually thinking back to the whole time where, when he left, and then he was sort of slandered, sort of. I feel like they kind of tried to muddy his name a little bit, you know, because it was sort of, remember how for years it was always, he kind of was gone, and then it was like people would be like, oh, he's like crazy, you know what I mean? There was a lot of that talk like that,
yeah,
and then
yeah,
he
yeah.
stayed gone, and then it's just amazing to have watched him come back after all that and kind of, you know, reclaim his title as, like, you know, this amazing comedian. Like, I feel like it's weird. It's almost like that whole thing actually caused him to become better and more of a comedy icon. Like, the fact that after all that, he came back better is sort of a testament more to it. And I almost feel like maybe that fueled it more or something. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, I think so for sure. I think it's like there are random people that the people that really become like, almost like showbiz, like legends or something. Like it's like you become like mythic almost, like where it's like rejection of like success like that. It's like Kurt Cobain or something. You know what I mean? Where it's just like you have massive, massive success and you genuinely do something to make sure you can't repeat it. You know what I mean? Like you're going to walk away from this dream. You know what I mean? Boy, if I had a sketch show that made $50 million a season or something, whatever it is, like, you know, if I had the number one album that, you know, changed the type of music people listen to or something, those are huge goals. But for somebody to do it and then be genuinely unhappy with it and walk away, I think that just fascinates people. I mean, it fascinates me, you know what I mean? I think it's a genuinely fascinating thing to think that, like, this person, for whatever reason, I don't know what they're like inside their head, but for whatever reason, this does not make them happy and they're going to go do the thing that they intend on doing. It's like, I believe that scares industry people when they have to deal with somebody after, you know what I mean? Cause it's just like, this person is legitimately bigger than us. Like,
right.
Like, Chappelle is probably the only comic that I just, so many people still want to hear what he has to say, that it's like any slander you could say about him in any kind of media outlet, people will just immediately go to see what he has to say about it. I mean, the only other person I can think of that's really even close to that is maybe like Joe Rogan, but I don't think Joe Rogan's like as nearly as funny as Chappelle. You know what I mean? I think it's just like
Rogan. It's like in a different context. It's, you know, they'll go to his podcast. Yeah. They won't go to see him do stand up, but Chappelle definitely became and is the guy now that when he comes out with something, you're kind of like, I want to hear what it's less even. I was saying this about how, like, you know, his last few specials, I was like, they're less about comedy now. Like, and I don't think that they're not funny. I just think that they're like, it's almost like Eddie Murphy. They're like bigger than stand up. They're not just stand up.
Yeah.
It's like that. Like he's really, he has a very unique, strong point of view on, like, he did that one, I forgot, it wasn't that long ago. I think it was shorter. I think he did it at his old high school or something. And
yeah,
it's,
the Duke Ellington.
Yeah, and it's
that
not even
great.
Like stand up, but it's great. I mean, yeah, it's great. He's he's more like an orator or like a modern day philosopher. But that's kind of the testament to him, is that he is so compelling that it's not just like, this isn't that funny. Because I remember that was the thing, people, like, when he came back and he was doing all these specials, they're like, it's not that funny. It's not that funny. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what, you're funnier or something? Like, what's funnier?
What I don't get. Like, it's like, okay, then show me someone who's much funnier than this. Like, it's like, the math is just there. I mean, that guy is just, like, touched by fire or something. I just feel like,
I think he's a victim of his own talent. I think you look at him and you're like, he's not doing anything. You're like, what's he doing? He's not even doing. I'll watch him and be like, I could do that. I could just stand there.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's like, I feel like it's like they say that about all the great ones. It's like you never really see him sweat. You know what I mean? You watch Michael Jordan play basketball in his prime or something, and it's like, he just doesn't seem like he's even sweating. It just seems inevitable. Like, it's almost like going according to his plan. You know, like, you see it and it's like, of course he would do that with the ball. That's an amazing thing. You know what I mean? Of course he would get it right out of that guy's hands and do that. It just seems like it's all going according to
his
will.
And with him, I see him and I'm like, well, yeah, I'll just go out there. Like, yeah, and like just kind of take my time and, you know, not really. It's he's the master of being in these huge rooms in front of all these people, and just he looks like he's just in your living room talking to you.
Totally. Totally.
Which looks like the easiest, that you'd be like, oh, well, how is that hard? And you're like, oh, he's in the most uncomfortable, not natural scenario in the world, acting completely himself and natural.
Yeah, like, you legitimately feel like he's maybe one of the few people that if you wheeled a bed out, he could take a nap. Like, he is that relaxed. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, he is legitimately that comfortable that it doesn't feel like I gotta reach, I gotta get him back over here. You know, like, it's like, oh, this isn't going the way I want. It's just like, I just feel like he's so free and easy. And yeah, it looks deceptively, you know, but it's like people seeing Pryor and they go, like, all he does is say motherfucker. And it's like, trust me, that's not all he does. Like, it's like,
yeah,
there's a lot of people that go up and just say motherfucker. I've seen a bunch of them and you'll never know their names. You know what I mean? It's like, they're not even going to take just motherfucker. Like, they're not even going to that, you know? Like, it's just, it's a real gift, like, what they're doing. Like, and the Duke Ellington thing I thought was really great too, because, you know, he tells his whole side of the story and he's very fair. And he says, if this is going to hurt somebody's feelings, I don't want it to be named after me. And then he says that thing by Duke Ellington. The quote where he's like, Duke Ellington said that art is dangerous and that's its chief appeal. When art stops being dangerous, you don't want it. And it's like, say what you want, the guy who you named the school after is the one who said it. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to talk about principles, this is the principle. Like, and it's like, it's pretty inarguable. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, I mean, I don't want to get into the whole like trans thing or anything, because it's just like, I think in that special, the Duke Ellington thing, not the special, but the talk, like, because he's just like,
wasn't that the, you know, that was basically almost like in response to the whole trans backlash or whatever that was.
Yeah, and he says at one point, he's like, I am one of the greatest comics that's ever lived. Like, it's likely that after I go, you won't see another one of me for decades. And I remember a lot of people teasing that clip and, like, you know what I mean? Like, saying what an asshole and everything. It's like, but what's he saying that's not true? Like, let's say you don't like the trans stuff. Let's say, like, take it off the table. That's still 15% of his entire output. You're talking a guy that burst onto the scene in 93 in Robin Hood Men in Tights, and he had that HBO half hour. He's probably 18, 19 years old. In that special, the half hour, he's already got like the Alcatraz tour bit that's hilarious. Like, why would a black dude tour prison? like he's got the thing about Batman living in this neighborhood, like the Robin, didn't you leave the Batmobile here, and that whole thing. And he's got the, I think it's like the origin of the N-word bit, like where it's like how rednecks came up with it. It was just, I forget the joke, but it's just like, we made a word that's gonna hurt people's feelings. And he just like unpacks the whole thing and it's like, dude is at fucking 18, 19, like he's already firing on,
well, you know, even Chappelle's show in a way felt like kind of like not a comeback, but almost a little bit of like, oh, where's he been, what's he been doing? And he was like 28.
Easily. And it's like,
and it's like, oh, where have I been? Okay, here's like the biggest show in the world. Okay, you know what? I don't like how it's going. I'm out of here. Like, and then it's like, oh, he's done. And then he's like, you know what? I'll be the biggest comedian in the world again. Like, okay.
I just think he's truly, I don't know, for even his critics that go like, he's a piece of shit. It's like, so forget about the trans stuff, because like I say, that's 10% of it. You're telling me that in any of those recent specials, there's not any bit that you would put. I mean, it's a little like, Carlin was like 80 and still doing stand up. You know, it's like, is every single bit pitch perfect? You know, it's like, well, no, but this guy's playing a game that he solved 40 years ago. Like he's, you know what I mean? He already solved this puzzle. It's like a Rubik's Cube and he's just being asked to do it over and over. And it's like, no, not every bit is great with George Carlin at 80, but it's like, there's still one or two fucking things in there that he's talking about that I have not heard any other comic cover. And it's hilarious. It's
and like, also that's a good, I mean, it's that brings me into like, not to, we can go back, but like, did you just watch the new Chris? You watched the new Chris Rock special?
Yeah. I watched it. Yeah.
So before we talk, like that's a thing. So I watched it and I was like, wow, this is great. Like this is so great. You know, especially you know the Will Smith thing. I mean, I was like, I thought it was like amazing. And I went on the internet and like, I was just blew my mind. People are like, this is shit. This sucks. He had nothing interesting. Everything's so tired. And I was like, what the fuck am I, what is going on here? Like, there's this weird faction that like seems to, be on Will Smith's side about this thing or.
I don't get it either. I really don't. Like, especially cause people were acting like he attacked Jada. Like he does talk about her. He definitely hits her. You know what I mean? But I think he pretty squarely keeps it on Will Smith. Like,
He never says her name. Jada,
he doesn't say her name. And he's also talking about the problems in their relationship that were very public. You know, this is not talking out of school. This has all been things that she said on her show or whatever. And it's like, so it's like he's laying the groundwork for what started the thing. And it's like, I've talked to comics. I've literally talked to comics that have said, Chris Rock's a fucking asshole. And it's like, I'm like, I don't understand. So a guy should be allowed to punch a guy or slap him or whatever. That's fine. You have no real problem with that because he's defending his girl.
That's the end of the first part of my conversation with Brian Olsen. If you'd like to hear the second part, please go to our Patreon, LE2B, and donate what you can and listen there. And also there's a lot of bonus content. Thanks a lot.
My words are weapons.
Never to show no emotion.
My words are weapons.
I use them to kill.
I'm eating crews like I'm Hannibal.